You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
What it is, what's up, and welcome everyone to Faces and Feels. I'm your host, Rafe Houston, and today I'm joined by a very special guest. I'm bright and up at Adam. If you've listened to my last episode, you heard me threaten to quit the podcast and give it all up, all due to technical issues. Well, there's none of that. And that is because my system was way too intimidated by my next guest. It's the one and only, the pride of South Australia, heavy set violence, Michael fucking Weaver. How are you today, my man?
I'm doing very well, Ray. Thank you very much for having me.
No worries, dude. You've been on my list for like a long time. We've even spoken about it kind of like briefly, and it's just finding the time to get it going. And this is going to be a great chat, man, because not only has there been great things coming your way, but then we've also got some great shows coming up. And I would argue you've got a couple of matchups that are probably some pretty important ones to you. So it's going to be fun to run through it all.
Yeah, there's definitely some big things on the horizon and some big shows that just went online this week as well. So yeah. It's going to be a pretty big couple of weeks for myself.
Absolutely. Sure. So exciting, man. Well, let's not bury the lead. Let's rewind all the way back, because since this is Michael Weaver's first time on the podcast, we're going to rewind back to how this wrestling thing started for him. So, man, when you think about like how you got into pro wrestling, when you think about some of the names and faces that stood out to you, who were some of your favorite wrestlers that got you even interested?
So I was a WCW baby. I grew up in that Foxtel in that time where WCW was at like 3 p.m. on a Sunday, but mm-hmm. Raw was like midnight on a Friday or whatever.
Sure.
And I was 8 to 10 years old or wherever. I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. So what are your parents going to let you watch? The one on 3 p.m. on a Sunday or the one at 12 p.m. on a Friday? So
yeah.
I kind of came through with WCW. Mm-hmm. I was a big Goldberg fan initially. Like I was a bullied kid and stuff. So seeing this guy just like dominate people who tried to bully him and all the overcoming the numbers, I'm like, oh, this is really sick. This guy's mm-hmm. awesome. And then I have two younger brothers who were crash test dummies for me, which my parents hated.
Yeah.
So my mum kind of broke me into the business in that sense of telling me like, hey, it's a show. Like they're trying to be entertaining. That really, even early on, was just like, okay, so what are the matches that I find the most entertaining? And then it started like leading me towards like the luchadors and then those things that like Chris Jericho has been probably on my list of guys for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of how I more saw it. It was like, even you'll ask anybody I trained with when I first started, I hated being a big man.
Yeah.
I only wanted to do like little guy shit for so long.
Yeah. And it's like you have a natural frame for big man energy and you're like, nah, man, let's walk the ropes.
Yeah. The moment I started being able to try and moonsault, I could. The moment I tried to do Canadians, like, I was in like Adelaide's really interesting with wrestling in the sense that it's always kind of like 10 years behind.
Yeah.
So when I broke in, which was like 2011, was my first match, kind of broke into the business in like 09. Indie wrestling hadn't really taken off yet here.
Mm-hmm.
So like I came in like just having studied and obsessed with like 05 ROH. So I was doing like Marufuji hidden clothesline spots and like following up and like all this stuff that nobody else was doing at the time. And I was just like, yeah, I don't think anybody realized what they were in for when I started.
Yeah, yeah. Were they still like really sort of looking at it from a WWF, WWE sort of point of view? This is the camera. Yeah. This is the way we tell the stories. And you're like trying to do all this Japan influenced. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. It was very Fed heavy here for a really long time. And it took them, like, even just early TNA did not get the reverence that it probably did in the other states.
Yeah, sure. Now that's so interesting. Well, actually, before we get much more into the training, we'll rewind a little bit because I do want to touch on that. The way you could consume wrestling as a kid here, because it was the same for me, right? Like Australia was very far away from stuff when I'm not sure how old you are when you were born, but for me, when I was like in high school and things like that, like the internet was coming into school. You know what I mean? Like I remember in grade 12, like trying to load up the WWF website and like watching Flashpoint videos of like Hardcore Holly brawling with Mankind in like the river and shit, you know what I mean? Like, and it's like tick, tick, yeah. Tick. And then when those shows that you mentioned started to show on TV, I had my auntie who lived in Perth. I was living in Geraldton, which is like 4 hours that away. We didn't have it on TV. We didn't have those channels. We only had like two. So she used to tape it for me and then like fill tapes with superstars. I think it was from WWE. Or like Nitro and shit like that, and then post them to me, and then I could watch the tapes. Yeah, exactly. Because all I had besides that was like Blockbuster Video, Video Easy, just renting VHS tapes. See, this is before DVD, you know, and before like the internet stuff. So how did you find, as you became a fan of it, and it's very interesting that your mum, like you said, smartened you up very early and it still held your interest as a kid because a lot of kids are like, nah, it's real. How did you then find more content? And did you have friends that were also into it, or was it as solitary a fandom for you as it was for me?
I think it was – I don't really remember having any friends who loved wrestling until, like, later in high school. Mm-hmm. Through primary school, I only ever remember being the weird kid that had the figures. Like, I would – like, I loved the action figures and stuff. Like, that was – a big one for me is, but yeah, like I remember getting World War III at my local Video Easy, mm-hmm. The Three Ring Rumble in all of its glory. Yeah, that was it. Like I didn't really take too much WWF because we had Foxtel, so it was mostly like Sundays were my day. I had the TV three to five. WCW Nitro was my time for the TV.
Yeah. Have you been watching that? I don't know if you've seen it on SBS. They've got that Who Killed WCW documentary series. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. I'll definitely have to check it out.
Yeah, it is. It's actually really good. It's like from goes through like the different eras and interviews people like Bischoff and Nash and stuff like that, and Goldberg and Bret Hart. And they talk about like the business challenges that they were facing and like the Ted Turner and all this kind of stuff. It's actually really fun. It's like a fun way to sort of reminisce through it if you're not really aware of all like the intricacies that sort of led to the place closing, you know.
But that was like I watched the McMahon documentary, and mm-hmm. it was like if you've been around wrestling for as long as you and I have, mm-hmm. you kind of already know most of the stories and everything. Like mm-hmm. so like I had people at work who'd be like, hey, did you watch it? Just like, yeah, I did. It was good. I already knew all of it. Like
nothing. Yeah.
Nothing was new, but it was those kind of things are really good for, I guess, outsiders or people who aren't like casual fans or some who maybe they liked it when they were younger but didn't really care too much now.
Exactly.
To go back and like, oh, this is actually kind of interesting because it kind of tickles that like true crime bug.
Yes. Yeah.
And everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. That was, I didn't actually watch the McMahon one. I think I watched the start of it or whatever. My wife ended up watching it on her own for whatever reason. And I was like, and then how did it finish? Did it get into, you know, all the controversies that have recently happened? Just like, kind of not really. It just sort of said it in text that it was happened because it was all filmed before that. And I was like, that's a shame. I thought it was sort of happening when it all happened and there would be more of that.
There is a scene that basically as they're filming some talking heads with Vince that it gets out live and it's like they just recording him like reading it online. And then it's just kind of like really awkward where he kind of just like packs his things and walks out. And it's just like.
That would be intense because he's an intimidating individual. You'd just be like, oh, fuck.
There's an interesting thing with like, because I think it might be that scene or it's a different scene. Heyman's actually in the background and you hear his voice talk about something that's brought up and he kind of like brings it back on track or cuts Vince off from incriminating himself at some point. I don't know. I'd have to go back and rewatch it, but I just remember it was like, that Paulie's voice. That's interesting.
That's a little bit. Exactly. I'm gonna have to watch it. I'm sure there's probably stuff you can pick up from it. But like you said, you know so much of it, and they do phrase these things in a way like, you know, for people who didn't live it or didn't go through it. So it doesn't like sit at the top of my like must watches because I do feel like that I've already done it. Whereas like the kind of recent stuff they've done, like the kind of behind the scenes type new thing that they were just
the
doing.
The Unreal thing.
Yeah, that was actually pretty – I haven't really religiously watched WWE in a long time, but I found it like pretty interesting. I couldn't believe how much they opened it up. You know what I mean? Like they're really just laying it out there for everybody, which I thought was kind of wild.
I agree. It was interesting in that same sense of like you almost go, how legit is it, or is it what they're like? Is it just a new level of kayfabe where it's just like giving you an inch to hide the mile? Like
yes, yeah.
So it's really interesting to go because there's definitely some stuff that was clearly like or that we had heard about with the Tiffany and Charlotte stuff where they brought up their went off script and then it's like, or did they actually not go off script or did they leak the fact that they went off script so they could have drama for the show that they
exactly did. And the same with like Seth's like fake injury recently and even now with what's going on with Cross, you know what I mean, are those guys now going, look, everybody on the internet feels like they fucking know what's going on, so let's let them know what's going on, but then use that to work them kind of thing. And if so, that's pretty amazing. And I kind of love it, to be honest. Like,
I mean, we all had to adapt to the business at some point with this new internet business. So maybe it's just something that, because we've heard the stories for years that they would always leak stories, the dirt sheets to lead people off the track and discredit certain journalists, however they want to put it. So maybe they've just realized that, hey, this is actually a way that we can still keep kayfabe alive.
Absolutely. I think so. It's like, well, everybody thinks they know what it is. So let's create a documentary series where we're like, hey, everybody, here's what's going on. But in reality, that's fake to an extent. You know what I mean? And we tell them what we want them to know, and then we can create what is real and what isn't. And if so, that's kind of fucking genius, to be honest. I really like it because, I think wrestling's better with kayfabe, and I think I definitely enjoyed it more when I was a kid and I didn't know what was going on. Though there's a part of me that also loves the inner workings as well. So I don't know. Wrestling's weird.
Wrestling's weird.
So as you're a fan, like you said, we both probably had pretty solitary fandoms when we were kids. I was the same. I didn't really have any friends or anything that were into it. I tried to get a couple. Nobody really cared. And it wasn't on TV or anything where I was. So it's kind of like this thing I have to go and find. And so I'd watch it with my dad and stuff like that. But then when I think I didn't really become a super kind of fan of wrestling until I did understand it. And that was many, many years later. So like, then I'm older and I've given it away and I've gone bored with it and I've been in a band and I'm doing like lots of other stuff and it comes back across my desk again, but now everything's sort of exposed and now I can listen to podcasts and I can hear these backstage stories and things like that. And that is, I think, what really kind of got me into wrestling. When do you think that fandom sort of ratcheted up for you? Like,
mine was probably later than I would, you'd probably expect. Cause I think I was pretty solid fan through high school. Like that's when I started finding people who also liked it. Like I had a group of mates that ended up backyarding and then going on to a few of them now coaches at Wrestle Rampage. So I actually had some pretty good mates that I could talk about wrestling and really like dive into in high school, which was really good. And then shortly after high school is when I met Joel and broke into the business itself. So I think I was actually in for a long time. I think I mostly started fracturing probably. I definitely fell out of it when I walked away from the business, which was the end of 2021. Mm-hmm. Just trying to think where there's definitely a period where I just stopped watching the Fed entirely for a really long time.
Yeah. There was like a whole period where it just was so repetitive, dude. Like I was like, yeah. I can only watch Finn Balor wrestle fucking Bobby Lashley so many fucking times. And this has gone on for like 6 months. And I'm like, I just do not care about any of this at all.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you when it was, but there's definitely a period where I was just like, I'm done with this. But it was also at the same time, I think I was probably consuming 40 hours of independent wrestling through torrents and pirating sites like Pro Wrestling Torrents and PW Torrents and stuff. Yeah. Like that's, I think, the turning point for me in terms of like my wrestling was like going and finding all this extra stuff, like discovering guys that like, I remember downloading shows for like AIW and seeing Bobby Beverly and Eric Ryan and a tag team coming out to Aerosmith and be like,
yeah,
oh, who are these guys? This is awesome. And now they're like two of the biggest names in deathmatch.
Fuck, what was their tag team name again? It was, because they were doing it briefly as well in ICW because they were like 440, but they would reference the, it was something like, Young Stallions or something. I don't know. It was something ridiculous.
To that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I remember talking to both. I've interviewed both those guys and talked about that kind of era of them. And that's wild, right? And so you're essentially a young man and you're watching these small independent shows, you know, from the States, like with no context. How does that then inform? Are you watching that stuff before you go and train yourself? Like, so you kind of have an idea of stuff, or?
It's probably around about the same time, I think.
Okay.
So I was definitely got into ROH because there was a point where WWE went off of Foxtel and they brought in the early TNA episodes.
Yes.
And
then, I was also watching those. It was on like the Foxtel pay-per-view channel and then like – once a week or whatever, you just get like Impact and shit, right? And I was like, why is this happening? This is great that I can just watch this.
Yeah, it was, I remember it was like the Fatal 4-Way, which was like low-key AJ Styles, Jerry Lynn, and Amazing Red was like their opening show match of their entire like run as a company.
Yeah, that's
and
wild.
It was incredible double elimination Fatal 4-Way Cruiserweight. For the, I think it was for the X Division title. It was ridiculous.
Oh, and actually, I'm mixing it up, right? This is before it became Impact. This is when it was actually TNA, right?
Yeah,
sure.
And then there's like the Flying Elvises and all these, like, which was incredible timing as well. And then it was just like, who is Loki? Who is AJ Styles? I'd never seen these guys before. And like, this was a guy who would like, I consider myself pretty well read in wrestling. I thought I knew everybody. I'm like, these guys are coming out of nowhere. And then it was like, then you do the deep dive. And then it's like, oh, what is Ring of Honor? And then I'm like watching Ring of Honor. I'm like, oh, cool. This. And at that point I was probably, I want to say like 14, 15, 16, maybe. I can't remember exactly, but that was just like, oh shit. Like this stuff's awesome. So I'd already gotten out of like the, cause I think WWE had probably gone PG at that point. Yeah. It was heading in that direction. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't care about this anymore. This stuff's awesome. But I remember a big one for me was ECW One Night Stand 2005, the first one they did. And I had all my mates took the Monday off school. They came around mine, and I was watching it. I'm going, this is the most incredible thing I've ever watched ever. Yeah. Like, I never saw any of the ECW stuff, like, other than, like, random clips on that I'd found here and there. But seeing this was just like, oh, this is incredible. And just Mike Awesome, Masato Tanaka was just like a light bulb moment for me going, oh, wrestling can be this? Yeah. I want this all the time.
Yeah. That's like when you wake up from the Matrix, right? Like, it's like when you get unplugged from TV wrestling and then you're like, oh, wow, this is actually what I've been trying to find. Like, the entire time, this is what I want from wrestling. Like, it was like that for me with that same stuff. And then, like, you see New Japan and shit, and you're like, oh, what the fuck? Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Though there is a point now where sometimes it's so hard to, like, keep up with everything where I'm like, just plug me back into the Matrix. Just plug me back in, and I can just be spoon-fed the shit every week that everybody else sees, and it would just be easier. Like,
yeah, I agree. Like, And like, this is the first year that I haven't like actively followed G1. And
me either. And I have a podcast about New Japan and we've just taken it off. We were kind of like, oh, trying to get the dates and we couldn't. We're like, you know what? Just fuck it. Like, we're like really not enjoying it at the moment. And so we've both stepped away and we're just deciding if we even want to do it anymore. You know what I mean? And then I just saw the results for, I don't know if you just saw what has happened with like Yoda's concussion. And now the like the final is Evil and Takeshita. So a part-timer and like Evil. Like, and it's like, this is the G1. And I'm like, fuck, dude. Like, this is a mess. Like, yeah. And it's hard for me to see because it's been my favorite promotion for like a long time. But it's not doing anything for me at the moment.
Same. Like, I went after ROH, New Japan, like, was that one that kind of like clicked for me. I was like, once again, torrenting sites. I remember there was a Giant Bernard and Carl Anderson. I can't remember who they versed, but it was like, I think it was like Wrestle Kingdom 3 or something.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, this shit's really good. And then like from then on, and then I was like there for all the, like the original Rainmaker run that I watched the Bullet Club form live. Like this was like, oh, fuck, this is really, really cool. So I was so into it for such a long time. And then it's just like it's getting to that point, like the same with the kind of Fed did where it comes repetitive and predictable.
Yeah. And I like, and especially trying to do extra content about it, right? Like I'm really trying to make it work and I'm like digging deep and things like that. And at the end of the day, I'm just starting to get frustrated because I'm like, there's options here and you guys keep just choosing the wrong one over and over again. And I'm like, how much grace can I fucking give you? Because I've only got so much free time and there's so much rest. And I'm like, I think I've just got to take a break from it. Cause I think I'm just in a spiral of like negativity. Cause they've, And I mean, it's tough too, because like they just got absolutely pillaged like from all their top stars and stuff. But I feel like a booking team needs.
It's a really short amount of time too. Like,
in the brutal grand
scheme of things, it was like a 5-year period where they lost like every main eventer they built.
Yeah.
And it just disappeared.
Yeah.
And three of them in one hit at one point. Like, it was just, it was rough.
It was super brutal. Yeah. That I was getting into New Japan just around that time because I first got into it with the AJ Styles, Nakamura, Intercontinental Wrestle Kingdom match, which was fucking amazing. And it wasn't long after that Wrestle Kingdom or whatever, where they're like, oh, yeah, so Nakamura, AJ Styles, and the Good Brothers are all going to WWE. And then you're like, don't worry, Okada's there, baby. It don't matter. We're just going to keep on trucking. And they're really good at keeping people simmering and just next man up, right, and next man up. But then you fucking lose like Okada and Ospreay and shit like that. And you're like getting next manning up. These people is getting very hard now. Like the bench is getting very weak. And like now the next manning up you're doing, these guys were literally young lions like a year ago at best, you know, and they haven't done.
Yeah. 6 months off of excursion.
Yeah.
You got your, was it Umora?
Yeah.
Umora and Tsuji are like, we're in excursion less than 18 months ago.
Yeah. And it's no wonder they're getting injured and shit as well, because they're like fucking like baby wrestlers, really. Like they're doing good work and they're talented dudes. But like none of those wrestlers that were in that like main event space had to do that quickly. They had whole careers. Like Okada and shit were like in the States and around the world and in Mexico and like doing all this stuff and like learning their craft and getting to that point, you know? And then these guys are just dropped in it where they need to be wrestling constantly and like trying to do these New Japan main events. It's just brutal. It's just so fucking tough, man.
But even then you had like Naito and stuff who the reason they built stables around these guys where you can have that guy who can do 8-mans and 6-mans for weeks leading up. So then he does the big one.
Yeah.
And then he can take a couple of months off. And then you go back to the multi-mans so you can still rest. But you got like these stables that were these huge pinnacles of what made New Japan, are just crumbling.
Yeah. Where they're just like, Naito leaves and they're just like, oh yeah, LIJ just isn't a thing anymore. We're just not in it. And it's like, this has been your top merch seller for fucking 10 years or whatever. And we're just like, oh, don't worry about it. What do you mean, don't fucking worry about it? How the fuck is Yoda Tsuji or Shingo not like kicking Naito out and like doing an angle and taking it over? They just go, bye. Like, Osprey, bye. And he's still kind of in it, but he's not. And you're left just going, why is nobody doing an angle? Like, this is not supposed to be a New Japan podcast. I'm very sorry, but I'm getting fucking animated about it because I'm just like seeing these opportunities to do storylines and elevator just crumble to dust.
Suzuki-gun was formed as well.
Mm.
Suzuki kicked out fucking Cozy and then formed Suzuki-gun. Like, Suzuki-gun did a whole bunch of stuff, and potentially, if you talk, who did you talk to, may have ruined Noah and whatnot. But that's a different comment.
They were my favorite faction, dude. They were my favorite. I fucking love Suzuki.
I have a signed shirt. It's so good.
Yeah. I've met him a few times, and we've got the fucking big towel and everything. Like, he's just fuck. And then they didn't do an angle with that either. It wasn't like Zack and Taichi take over. They would just shake hands and give each other a hug, and it just goes away. Like,
yeah, but then you, at least with Bullet Club, you've always had, there's always someone who's taken over.
Mm.
Whether it's, I think David Finlay's done a great job. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he was the right choice at the time. He probably was the only choice, really.
Yeah,
but he's done a great job.
I think he's like one of the, but him and the War Dogs are the only thing in New Japan that's really fucking worth watching at the moment. You know?
Yeah, they just. There's an intensity that they have that the rest of the I don't want to say the rest of the locker room lacks, but it almost, they don't bring it.
Yeah.
With theirs, you feel like if it's big match feel every time.
Yeah.
Especially Gabe Kidd.
Yeah.
Gabe Kidd getting hurt like night one of G1, I think is the reason why everybody checked out.
Yeah. And also as well, I think Gabe Kidd doing the stuff in AEW was a terrible idea. I don't think it makes sense for his character. This is the guy that's like, fucking AEW is where you go when you're a fucking nerd and don't know how to kiss a girl and shit. And then he's just like John Moxley's fucking offsider, like, yeah, as like the sixth man in a st- – like, it doesn't make sense. And it's like, you had like – you were kind of – your whole vibe was like, you're the second coming of Inoki, but in a gaijin, you know what I mean? And like, fucking they're all getting behind you and he's the new heart of New Japan. And then just – completely fucking just undoes it. And it just like, yeah, the mystique again, just a fucking dust. And it's like, what are we doing, guys? Like, this is fucked. Anyway, Jesus, thank you for getting me through this crisis moment where I think we just need it. We'll hug it out. I'm going to see you in like a week at these shows. I think you and I just need to maybe share a hug and just like fucking pour one out for New Japan. Jesus Christ. Oh, God, it's been an emotional day for me. So anyway, what were we talking about? So then how do you then find training in wrestling? We've been through all the fandom and where you got to where you were. How do you then go, I'm going to go fucking train in this shit, you know?
So I kind of broke into the business very different to probably anybody else. So I met Joel in 07,
mm-hmm.
Joel Bateman, for those who don't know what I'm talking about. We did a little mini doco leading up to our match that just went on IWTV this week.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we met at a servo, just started shooting shit, found out about wrestling, and then
fueling up next to each other and noticed a wrestling shirt and started talking? Like, how does that conversation start?
Well, the weird thing is, so he was working at a servo and I was working at a different one. So he was at like in Adelaide, we have OTRs, which are like half servo, half subways, half Oporto.
Sure, yeah, I know. Mm-hmm.
And they're everywhere. They're 24/7. And I worked night shift, so I finished at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
I would drive home and I would stop at that subway and get food.
Mm-hmm.
And we just chatted. And I was just like, I don't even know how we just started. Maybe I overheard him talking to somebody about wrestling and I piped in.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I can't even remember. We're talking about 07, man.
Yeah, exactly. But just one of those things, like a random meeting somewhere where you realize that you both had a fandom of wrestling, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. And then we just started talking and then he mentioned that he was a wrestler and stuff. And then I talked about how I had mates who'd started training at like Wrestle Rampage at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And and whatnot. And then like he kind of broke me into the business. So he was starting to run a company called PWI, Pro Wrestling Ignition. Mm-hmm. So I kind of learned the ins and outs of the wrestling before I started actual training. So we're doing ring crew, or I was learning how to book, or was like all the parts that come to what you need to run a show before I'd even taken a bump. And then he was like, hey, you're doing all this other stuff. Do you want to actually like learn how to wrestle? Cause I was like not managing at this point, but I was like ring announcing and commentating. Mm-hmm. It's like, sure. And I remember we just went across the road to the oval across from his house, and it had rained like the day before. So the ground was kind of like muddy, but not like super muddy. And I was just, he taught me to break fall on a oval across from his road.
And that was the beginning of it. So Joel trained you.
Joel was my initial trainer. He's the one that trained me the first. Mm-hmm. I would credit more him as a mentor.
Sure.
I would say the guys who trained me are Johnny Radde, Mike Boomer, Zach Sabbath, the SA guys. Mm-hmm. So when PWI closed, but even before they closed, but around that same time, like 2011-ish, I joined Snake Pit to train, which is now PWSA. Mm-hmm. So I was already kind of like that point taking training a lot more seriously and like four nights a week, six for 6 months straight. Like Mike Boomer is arguably one of the best trainers in the country, but probably doesn't get the credit he's due. He is a big one of the, you work your ass off, you get gassed, then you learn to do everything clean while gassed. Yeah. So when it happens in a match, you're still going to perform properly.
Sure.
And like, I'm not going to toot my own horn because it's nowhere near what it once was. But at one point, I would argue I had probably one of the best gas tanks in the state.
Sure.
And it was purely just from training so regularly and training in that style with Mike. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of the most underrated things in wrestling, I think, is that ability, like you say, no matter what's going on, when that gas tank is low, to be able to keep going and have it look good and convincing, and then add to that.
Safe.
Yeah, exactly. And then add to that stuff like blood and glass and things like that. It's keeping your head and doing it safely and stuff. That's the most challenging thing, I would say.
Yeah. It's definitely been good in that sense of being able to translate that to a more of a deathmatch scene of just don't panic. Mm-hmm. And that's always like, I've wrestled a few guys' first bigger death matches and stuff recently. A guy here in Adelaide called Twisted J, who was very good. He's also on Don't Yuck My Yum. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those ones, like, I was just like telling the ref, like, no matter the bump, check him first. Mm-hmm. Just breathe through it. If you feel like something's off, take a second, evaluate. And then if something's wrong, talk to us and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We did really good. I haven't had any major issues with anybody I've worked. So mm-hmm. We've been good.
Absolutely. That's it. Like you say, keeping your head would be the most intense thing, because when things are rushed and when panic is happening, that's when injuries and mistakes happen, right? Like,
yeah,
and sure. Especially like in something like deathmatch, I imagine like flinching and half doing things can make it a lot worse than just going, for example, through something cleanly, you know, like that's where things can get bad.
I definitely agree with that. And it could just be the difference between flinching if you're in your arms, like if you're only like half covering, then suddenly your face is more open, where if you do the full, like commit to it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you might not want to open up yourself or whatever. Like there could be a dozen reasons, but it's just commit to what you're doing. There's a reason we've been trained for so long in how to do things safely.
Sure.
Just because we've got a few little things that add an extra risk, but it's like, it's this end of the day, it's the same bumps.
Yeah. Doesn't change the science and the mechanisms of everything. Yeah, absolutely. So as you have progressed and things like that, what made you then decide that you wanted to start dabble in deathmatch? Or was that something that had always kind of been on the cards for you?
It was always something Joel and I really liked. Mm-hmm. I remember like early on, before I'd even had my first match, Joel wanted me to do like an Abdullah the Butcher style gimmick. Like, and even then I was just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Not really like 100% sure on the idea of like blading constantly.
Yeah.
now you've seen me. I don't care about how much I bleed. But we're talking like 15 years ago, it was a very different story.
Yeah.
There was a period with PWSA where it was, we were wrestling weekly shows, and there was a group of us that were so hungry that we always tried to one-ups each other.
Yeah.
And like Adam Crowe, who's now in Alpha in Melbourne, you got Matt Hayter, who's done amazing things both at Riot City and over in the States. And there was a group of us that were always just like, have our match, walk back through the curtain, follow that, boys, follow that. And there was just, and it was just this energy and competitiveness that always drove. But the one thing that I had that those boys wouldn't do is that hardcore style. Like nobody wanted to do as much hardcore as I wanted. Mm-hmm. And then it just always became one-upsmanship of like, okay, cool. So we'll do tacks. Like, well, I want to do barbed wire. Well, I want to do this. And then it was like barbed wire bats, Legos. And it was just, we're like a relatively PG show. So I couldn't go to the point of glass and fire at that point. Mm-hmm. But it was always like, how can I be creative and push the limits and get away with what I'm doing without going hugely like into the realm of deathmatch?
Yeah.
And then it was just like, so I always just wanted to push myself. It was always just be, how do I be more creative? How do I like do more things like barbed wire boards? And then it was like, well, how do we get creative with barbed wire boards? And then just constant one-upsing both myself and everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that was just then when it came to the opportunity, like, so when DMDU started, I was on the first show. It was me and Mad Dog did barbed wire boards against Raw Beef.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, cool. This is really sick. And then Callan and Damien are on that main event. And I'm watching this going, okay, this is incredible. Like, I've said it to a few people. I had some mates that came to watch the first show we did in Adelaide. And I'm like, live deathmatch is the most unique experience on the planet. Mm-hmm. There is nothing like it. Like, you may not like watching it on a tape, or you may not feel, but come watch it live. Mm-hmm. And it is so immersive. Mm-hmm. That the only way to not like it or not enjoy it is don't let yourself.
Yeah, yeah. It's a visceral experience, is what I always say. And we watched it for the first time at Big Japan, not really knowing what we were getting into. And then it was the same thing. It's like 100 light tube death match in the main event. We're like, why is everybody putting on like ponchos and glasses and shit in the front row kind of thing? And then it's fucking gone. And you're just left going, what is this? And how do I like see this again? And then add to that going to shows with like the kind of vibe that DMDU puts on, or ICW, No Holds Barred, Dude, Where's My Ring? Few beers in a pub, whatever it may be. And it's just a great fucking time. It's just crazy. You know what I mean? Everybody has a good time. I have friends that come to shows here. They don't even watch wrestling, but anytime a dude shows on, they've bought a ticket and they're there to fucking scream and have fun with it.
Yeah, it is. Like you say, it's so visceral. And it's like, even coming from a worker's perspective, you watch these matches, you're going, I want to experience that, or I want to push myself to that limit. I want to see what I can do in that realm or in that genre. Mm-hmm. So then I took some time off. I was off for about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then I started coming back. Johnny Raddick was retiring. So I got myself back in shape so I could have one final match with him before he called quits. And then that was in May. So that was in May of 2023. Mm-hmm. And then Joel was like, hey, we need someone for VIX. A DMDU Deathmatch Championship. Do you want to step up? And I was like, and it didn't even, it was like, done. Let's do it. Yeah. Like, what will you have in store? And that was, I consider that my first step in through the door for deathmatches. But I was probably doing stuff close to more elevated hardcore for years leading up to that. So it wasn't a giant leap to go from nothing to everything.
Yeah, sure.
It was more of like a, I'm just crossing the threshold.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And now that you've been across that threshold quite a few times, I've seen you do some pretty crazy stuff nowadays, especially in like dream tournaments and things like that. How's it feel? Like, do you feel like, I'm glad that I took that step? It's like, it's a confronting thing, you know, for me and my body, but it is something that I am like continue to challenge myself with? Like, how do you feel about it all?
Yeah, physically, it's not too bad. There are definitely some days after the show where I'm just like, got my old man hips on.
Sure.
I'm walking around like I need a walker. After the match with me and Joel, I had a gummy bear sized piece of glass taken out of my elbow. Which
Fuck.
That was, I honestly, I didn't even realize there was anything in there. I just wanted to get it stitched because it kept opening. They got an x-ray. They're like, oh, there's something in there. And then pulled it out. And yeah, it was about the size of a gummy bear of a glass pane. So it was stuff like that. You're like, okay, cool. Like there was definitely a level of risks, but it's like nothing I've come across where it's been like, this is crazy. Like this is stupid. Dream 3 was my first dream tournament. I think you were at that one when you came down with all the Perf boys.
Yeah.
Sliced my face open. Like that was.
Yeah, it was gushing.
Cut. Yeah. That was bad.
And you went through the spider web as well, right? Like,
slide
through that, the spider. Fucking crazy. There was a person on the right. So I was on the opposite side. And there's for anybody that hasn't seen Dream 3, go watch it. It's a fucking great show. But they've got a big sort of wooden frame with spider web of barbed wire between the ring and the railing, like the, you know, barricades. And Mike gets thrown over the top, like through it, right? And it explodes. There was a person like on that railing right there. When that exploded, I swear that frame was like this, like just past their so fucking close. I was like, how's this guy not moving out of the way? Because it's very obvious what's going to happen here. He's lucky he didn't get knocked out. I swear. Like,
there's two clips on my Instagram at Heavyset Violence. You can see it from the other angle that you're talking about. And one of the corner breaks and shoots like this.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm like, talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just like, that easily, if he was leaning forward, that's shooting him into his skull.
Like, yeah, it
was,
he's dead. Like, and that's so scary. Like,
and my back was turned to him. Like, I had no idea it happened. Like,
no.
That close to anything until I'd seen the clips.
Yeah.
It's like 2 million people have seen that clip of just this guy almost potentially dying.
But yeah, I wonder if he even knows, but it's like one of those things that if you're in the audience, like for these things, keep your head on a swivel. You know what I mean? It's not an exact science. Like you need to move your ass, get out of the way when it's coming. Let me ask you this, actually. I was talking about this with somebody recently and it'd be interesting to talk to you about it. Is there a point where like, so you start doing this stuff, right, and it escalates and you go through, you've gone through webs of barbed wire and you've bled a lot and the stuff been through. Is there like kind of, how do I word this? Like kind of a confidence and indestructibility that comes along with that. Like I'm wording it terribly, but you start to go, hey, wait, I'm not made of fucking paper. Like the casualness in which a Joel Bateman handles his injuries fucking shocks me every time. Like the last time we were there in Melbourne, he finished and there was a gash above his belt, like on his back, massive, that was just leaking. And I'm just like, yo, you're bleeding? He goes, oh yeah, she'll be right. And we like went to dinner and shit and he's just bleeding and he just doesn't care about it. And me as a human, if I have like, I've currently got like a tiny cut on my thing and I'm like, stop the presses. This is a very serious injury that I now have to deal with and it's very inconvenient. This man's covered from head to toe and he just doesn't give a fuck anymore. There must be like a certain level of like invulnerability where it's like, I am an indestructible creature and nothing can stop me now and none of this shit phases me. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. There's a Hunter S. Thompson quote, and I'm going to paraphrase this in terribly, but it's essentially the only people who know where the line is are the ones that have crossed it and died.
That's amazing. And yes, that's it, right?
And that's kind of how it's not how I feel, but it's almost to that point where you're like, the more you do, the more you escalate, the more you realize, oh, I can actually do this. Like I can push these limits further. Like in the match with me and Danny, which went online on ICW No Holds Barred this weekend on IWTV.
76. Mm-hmm.
Great show, top to bottom. I'm incredibly proud of everybody that was involved in that. It's hot. Like, that's the Sunday. I think that's what people can't realize. That was the Sunday.
That was the second show. That was hard. Was it the second show or even? No, it was the third show, because you guys had even done stuff on the Thursday. So, like, everybody, it's everyone's third show. They've hit the Sunday show. Everybody's had drinks. They've eaten. You know, things have happened over those days. They're already carrying injuries, and everyone's going crazy. Like, Vic and fucking JT in the main event, bullshit, like, main event. And both those dudes, like, Vic didn't come out with us, like, the night before, because his head's wrapped, you see, at the side of it, because it hadn't stopped leaking in days. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to come to the pub, boys. I feel a bit woozy now. I think I'll just get some sleep. And I'm just like, a bit woozy? This motherfucker needs to go to a hospital. Like, crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Tremont fountain that day for sure.
Oh, he was just bleeding, like, clumps of blood through his beard, just drinking beers, cheers, and people, like, absolutely. On commentary, I referred to him like Vic Craig just be getting around here like a pit gremlin all day, because he was a menace. Like, he's just drinking beers and he's hanging out, and I'd be doing commentary and his little face would appear next to me and he's talking shit, and I'm like, this man is insane. And I'm like, that's what it is, right? You guys just a living on that line now, and you're like, well, I guess it don't matter till I cross it. Like,
yeah, I think I don't want to say there's like a mutually absorbed destruction at some point where we're all going to get to that point, but I think it also what you were saying in the terms of like you start realizing that you're not made of paper, the more you get closer to that line, the more you realize they're like, this is fine. Like, what I was saying was the match with me and Danny Demento, I actually sliced my finger to the bone right at the end of that match.
Really?
There's a point where you'll actually see it. There's a point and my fingers are just dripping and I've taped them up. But it's just like, it's a finger. Like, I'm not going to die from it, like a cut to my finger. And I didn't realize.
Yeah, it's annoying and it's uncomfortable, but it's fine, right? Like,
I end up having to get it glued shut because it's like it went to the bone essentially, right. Straight from like right here. Yeah. But it's just like, it's a finger. Like, literally, worst case scenario, they lop off the tip of my finger and I'm Daniel Chick for the rest of my life. Like,
fine. You're like, look, I'm not as good as guitar as I once was. While I'm healing, it hurts to eat salt and vinegar chips, but really we're still okay.
The worst part was just typing, because for my day job was just it always just as I'm typing would just nick it.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the fucking life-shattering injury I'm currently dealing with right now is typing and shit like that. It's fucking bad. But I've got a shout out in that match. You hit Demanto with a Vegemite lariat, and I had to say that was so fucking funny. Like, such a genius choice, because his aversion to Vegemite is well documented at this stage, and so it's like, I'm gonna hit him with the Achilles heel with my finisher. Like, it was great.
Yeah, that I can't take credit. It was half my idea, half it wasn't. Everybody's telling me you've got to get the Vegemite in there. I'm like, what's the easiest way to kind of at it, and it's just like, put it on a lariat. But yeah, it's like, I've always tried to be the most entertaining wrestler I can be, and it doesn't matter that if it's a death match or if it's a regular or whatever we're doing, I just want crowd to be entertained. I just want them to enjoy themselves. So
yeah,
putting some little moments of levity into what I do is always going to be part of my shtick.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, dude. Well, let's have a look at what you've got coming up, because I'm going to mind blank all of the matches because I know we've got a bunch, but I know one of which is Abdullah Kobayashi, which is huge. When I talked about my first death match I ever saw, he was the Big Japan champion in that match at that time. He is an amazing wrestler, a menace of a person. We've seen him loose and stuff. He's so fucking funny, like, all the time. My wife's obsessed with him. Her and him were like, where were we? It was when we were in Japan. And she's just like, you're cute. And he's like, you're cute. Like, aggressive. Like, they have like a cute off every time. He's just like the funniest dude. And I think you and him as a matchup is going to be so fucking entertaining. How was it to get the news about that?
It was surreal. This whole experience has been really surreal. Like, if you think about it, I've only been doing death matches since I stepped through that threshold. like just over 2 years. Like it was 2 years ago in July that I did my first one. Mm-hmm. And in that time, I wrestled Demento, Tremont, and now we've got Kobayashi. And it's that same sort of thing of like when I got told, it was just like, oh, okay, cool. Like yeah. just almost to that point where it's hard to process because you're like, when's it going to get pulled out? Like when's the rib coming?
Yeah, when I'm sure. Like,
so it's just so surreal. Like even at this moment, like today, we're what, 2 weeks away, mm-hmm. less than 2 weeks away. And it's still just like, I can't process it.
Yeah.
I'm doing my tape study and I'm just like, it just doesn't feel real. Like Abdullah Kobayashi is easily one of the most iconic deathmatch wrestlers of all time. Like you Google deathmatch wrestling and he would be one of the first five photos.
Yeah.
Easily. Mm-hmm. Like he just, the him and the Kenzans and just he is iconic. Mm-hmm. Everything we do is him. And it's just like, yeah, I'm over the moon given the opportunity. The fact that like Danny and Joel and Big Japan have the faith in me mm-hmm. to be able to like step in and step up against him is incredible. I appreciate every opportunity I'm getting, mm-hmm. but it's also, I understand the importance of the opportunities I'm getting. It's not going to be a moment for me to go, okay, cool. This is not a participation trophy for me. This yeah. is a chance for me to step up, mm-hmm. take the big W and then go, hey, Big Japan, hey, ICW, why is Vix getting the shots in Chattanooga? Like, you put me in these positions, I'm getting the wins.
Yeah.
When's my opportunities to start traveling?
Absolutely. And it always, and even without, say, a W over him, being with him has the opportunity to, like, be viral, to have those moments, to, like, you know, get the shares, like to do that stuff and increase your name and reputation. So it's a pretty awesome spot, man. Like, absolutely. I'm very excited for you.
Like this Adelaide show is like, we are 3 weeks removed from the first deathmatch show in Adelaide.
Yeah.
And then in 2 more weeks, we've got me and Kobayashi, you got Callan and Akira, mm-hmm. this is incredible.
It is
like, genuinely an incredible, like it's insane. Like Adelaide is going to be so spoilt with this card.
I know. It almost had us buying flights to be like, maybe we just fucking duck over to Adelaide. And we're like, we cannot. Like at this stage, you see how much me and my wife travel. We're like, we fucking can't. Yeah. Do it, like, and even then we may still do it, like because when I saw that announced with you and him, I'm like, oh fuck, I'm gonna have to go to Adelaide, and I like Adelaide, but it's just like I'm about to be in Melbourne like next week, like, and then it's like fuck, and we've had so much leave and been doing different stuff. It's like, unfortunately, I don't have the time and bandwidth to be like, well, let's fly into Melbourne and just stay through these 2 weeks and just do all the stuff. You know what I mean? Because at some point I need to work and I haven't been doing much of it. Like, and even last year I was injured at the end of the year. I'd like broken my wrist. So I was working home for like 3 months. So it feels like I haven't been around, you know, even though I have and I still do stuff from home and stuff. It almost feels like I'm just taking the piss out of my own life. And so there's a certain point where I've got to go, no, I'm not going to fly to every wrestling show in Australia.
And we've got arguably the biggest dream ever this year. Like it is going to be already announced for 3 days. I've heard rumors of some of the announcements.
Fuck.
It is going to be an enormous event. This is going to be the pinnacle of deathmatch wrestling in Australia. So
yeah, far. See, that's another one that I've got to figure out if I can get there for it. What date is it? Do you remember off the top of your head? It's okay.
I think it's the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of November.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Motherfuckers. That's right. Like 1,000 years ago, we bought tickets to Metallica on the 1st. Oh, no. Look, that's a problem for future me to figure out if I can get to it. But yeah, and then remind me, who else have you? What have you got in Melbourne this coming?
So we've got me and Vix.
That's right.
A rematch of the one that we had 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing Blazing Saddles 2 again. Mm-hmm. Blazing Saddles again. This will be the second.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got Cactus Tubes, which are tubes we covered in thumbtacks. We're doing cactuses. We've got barbed wire, tumbleweeds. Tabasco, salt, lemons. It's going to be chaos and fuckery of its highest order.
That's fucked, yeah.
And then we got a just announced this week is a fatal four-way. Gore, Samson, Cousin Condry, and myself.
Yes.
I guess it's the equivalent of a monster's ball.
Yeah, no shit. Wow, that's crazy. When, like, I haven't seen Condry before, but I'm pretty sure kind of big. When Jordan Samson is probably the smallest person in the match, you know there's a fucking issue, eh? Like,
and, like, Samway is the set, like, Jordan Samson was my first match back when I took time off. I worked in for MXW in Ballarat. And I kind of didn't know what I was getting into because I'd seen him around, I'd seen his stuff, but I didn't really know. That boy is not only dense, but he hits so hard. Yeah. Like, everyone knows how legit Gore is. Not enough is talked about how legit Samson is.
Oh, legit fucking fighter. Like, championship fighter. Like, held titles and shit. Like, shoot fighter. Like, the real deal.
He's so good. Both of them are just incredible. And, yeah, Gore is an ungodly specimen of a man. Like, he is just, like, not even... It's weird to say he's deceptively strong because you know he's strong, but he's, like, off the chart strong.
Yeah.
Like,
his entire body's been built to kill people for his entire life. Like, that's no exaggeration. This is a man that, like, you know, has studied kickboxing in Thailand and stuff. Like, his job is to train people to fight and stuff. Like, he's as real as it gets. Like, also...
deadlifts, like, 300 kilos. Like, just enormous weights. Just throws people.
Yeah. Fucking brutal person. And so tell me a little bit about Condry, because that's a sort of new name to me that I just saw appear on the pictures as well.
Yeah, so Cousin Condry is representing Shit Show Wrestling. He's a Tennessee-based wrestler, so he's coming over.
Oh, really?
As part of the Shit Show Wrestling ICW weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Zach Austin, I believe, are the Shit Show Wrestling contingent.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know a lot about him, mm-hmm. but like he's another big boy. He's a unit.
Mm-hmm.
Throws hard, hits hard. He's my kind of boy.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be brutal. So which one is which day? So Dayton Brewery on the Thursday, is that you and Vix or is that the
four? So I'm not doing the Thursday.
Oh, you're not?
I've got me and Vix is on the Saturday.
Yeah.
Boy on the Sunday.
Okay, right. So I'll be at the Thursday and the Saturday. I've got to fly home, unfortunately, so I'll miss the Sunday one, which is a shame. But I will get to see you and Vix and that absolute nightmare that sounds like this Blazing Saddles match. That's going to be terrifying.
I just want to talk about Vix for just 1 second. Like, Blazing. I know this is my podcast, but she is on the streak of a lifetime. Like,
yeah, she's killing it.
Just the momentum that she is riding, the effort that she's putting in, how good her matches are, and just no one's ever doubted Vixen and her drive, but it is stepped up an entire another level. Like, this has since getting announced for Chattanooga and Dale Patrick's and now John Wayne Murdoch. Like, it is almost to the point where I don't think that Dale and John know what they're in for.
Yeah.
Like, Vix is going in there with death and murder in her eyes.
She's on one. And like, I just spoke to her recently. I just did a thing and like where she's at now with like her fitness and like the drive that's giving her and the motivation and stuff. It's really impressive to see like how far she's coming and like, there's just no stopping her now. She's cooking.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's really cool that everyone can feel that, you know?
Yeah. It's finally 23 years of dedication of now getting to a point where she's reaping the rewards that she's earned. Like, let's be honest, she's earned them.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you see her, you know, backstage and with Rinker, like she's clearly like a leader, you know, like, and everybody respects the hell out of her. And so, yeah, it's just so cool to see, man. It's cool to see everybody coming out. And I'm really looking forward to that match with you and her. I think that's going to be super fun.
We did a no ring in Sydney, just DMU's debuted 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And like her and Terry went hard, like bring out the mops. It was hard. But it was even then, it was just like, to the point where like her hair had been like tangled into the point of barbed wire. She's like, just cut, rip it out, like whatever. Like there's just a level of dedication that she is bringing right now that is head and shoulders above some.
Yeah.
By far.
That's so cool, man. That's so cool. Are you, if you're not on it, are you going to be at the Dayton one, or it's probably a little bit far for you, right? Because you drive into Melbourne in order to do this stuff.
Nah, I usually fly in, but
oh, that's smart. Just very smart. Work. I've done that drive like, well, four times just this year, I think it's been, because we went to Gather Round and we had bought everything in advance except for our flights, hoping for some cheap ones to come up, but that did not happen. It was like $2,100 to fly into Adelaide, and we were like, fuck that. So we flew into Melbourne and drove in and out, and then why else did we go? Went to like some music festival or whatever and did the same thing. We were already in Melbourne and drove there. So I've done that drive a few times, and it is like, it's definitely not the worst drive I've ever done. It's totally doable, but it is a long day. And I imagine if you're going to be like doing physical activities and stuff like that, it's probably better to just take what's the flight? Like an hour and a half,
yeah, like pretty far. Hour 10.
Yeah. Just like get in, get out. And what do? Just get like a hotel, get a sleep, and then head back again.
Depends on the day. Depends when I fly in. Mm. Usually if it's, for these earlier shows, like because the Saturday and Sunday are like earlier in the day, they're not quite night time.
Yeah.
I try and get in the night before.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But this time I'm just flying in 6 a.m., get in there,
mm-hmm.
get a rental car, probably head more or less to the venue after getting a feed.
Yeah.
And then check in at some point, like who knows when.
Yeah. What time's the Saturday one start? I thought it was like 7. Seven show time.
Oh, is it not on? Maybe I should probably triple check that.
Yeah.
I thought it was like same as the with Dream, where it was like a 2 p.m. start.
But yeah, so did I originally, and that's what we had planned for. But then I think Amy said that she had checked online and it had said on the DMDU Facebook or something it was like a 7-1. I don't know. That's a question for like a Joel Bateman or somebody like that.
Yeah.
I would love to know, though. I'd love to know.
Good podcasing here. Just us on our phones trying to find
Here you go. Look at this. So, oh, no, that's the 29th of August. What am I talking about? God damn. Yeah. Doors at 6 p.m.
Okay.
Bell at 7, Saturday, August 23rd.
Okay. So it's a normal time show. So,
Yeah.
I'd fly in, check in. Yeah, probably just chill for a while before heading to the venue.
Absolutely. I mean, you guys normally go there and warm up and like do a bunch of stuff and the setup and things involved. Because Little Ginger is not a wrestling venue. Like it all needs to be like set up in there and sorted out and things like that.
Yeah, Little Ginger's is a great venue, great people. Mm-hmm. Really cool atmosphere too. Just having people like I mean, everybody says this, and I've never wrestled. Like the most people I've ever wrestled in front of was like 400 or 500 when I was in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Never wrestled in front of like thousands. But there is that something cool about wrestling in front of 70 to 100 people in a small room.
So yeah.
It just feels like so much more.
The vibe is so good. I mean, they captured it really well on the IWTV footage and stuff. Like it, you know, you're just in this warehouse with like some lights up and things like that, but it really was like immaculate vibes and everybody's so excited and having a wicked time. Before we start to wind down, which we should, I need to let you escape. You just said you wrestled in Japan. Well, what did you do?
Yeah, so I went over in Japan in 2016.
Okay.
I was like 18 day tour.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing huge. I worked with Fugo. Had like 11 matches in Tokyo and Osaka.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the biggest one was the last show I did, which was about 500 people. It was a 6-man tag. So it was me, WB Bellows, and Fugo Umeji versus the great Kabuki. First ever IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, Shiro Koshinaka, and the promoter, the great Mucha.
What the fuck? That's wild.
It was all kinds of crazy. I have stories for days about just the Kabuki being backstage and just because we're in this room and there's like really only the six of us.
Mm.
And Kabuki and Fugo are like the only two who really speak English. Uh-huh. And Kabuki speaks great English because of all of his time that he was in the States. Mm-hmm. And he's just genuinely one of the funniest people I'd ever met. The promoter, the great Mucha, had never wrestled a foreigner before, and he made me pinky promise to keep him safe. And Kabuki just goes, fuck that guy, stiff him.
That's brutal. That's right. How did that opportunity come about?
So Wham Bam Bellows, WBOs, had met Fugo when he did some like no ring stuff here in Adelaide years before. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of reached out to him and like, hey, we're looking to come over. These are the kind of the dates that we're looking to do. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, come down. I'll arrange some stuff for you. So it started off initially that we're going to do. So we went over and did the his show. There was a WW World Underground Wrestling, his version of the chains. Mm-hmm. And that was really cool. And then the next day we did like this no ring match show for Miss Mongol and her students, which is really chill. Mm-hmm. And then we had a friend of ours who was living in Osaka at the time. So we're like, let's go over to Osaka for a few days and hang with them. And then we just got a few more bookings in Osaka, which we ended up doing. You may have seen it online. There's this company called Fighting United Crazy Kings, or F-U-C-K.
Yes.
F-U yeah. Star C-K.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
They have this unbelievable tag team tournament. Mm-hmm. The Hondo and Necro Butcher have won this tournament.
Yeah, wow.
And so have I.
Wild.
Me and Wham Bam Bellows are one half of the 2016 Fighting United Crazy Kings unbelievable tag team winners. And then Pondo and Necro won it in like, I think like 08 or 07 or something. This is like, oh, this, I want to say tournament that Necro and Pondo have won. Like, just crazy how like foreshadowing that had been.
Yeah, yeah. That's just so wild. Like, so random, dude. But amazing though, you put it on the resume.
Yeah, definitely something like in this. I think we're the only Australians to have won it. I'm pretty sure we'd be the only Australians to have won it.
The fuck tournament winners.
He is my fuck partner.
Yeah, yeah. So what's it called? Fighting United Crazy Kings Unbelievable Tournament or something.
Yeah, tag team tournament or something.
Unbelievable tag team tournament. Amazing. That is awesome. Well, dude, let me let you get out of here. We'll have to do this another time and reminisce about it on Japan as a bit, because you've obviously been there a bit and spent some time, and so have I. So we'll get into it, and we'll try not to spiral out of control about New Japan when we do it, yeah? Tell everybody where to like find you and follow you, get merch, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, your Insta is your best bet, at Heavy Set Violence. I am on Twitter, which is at HVY Set Violence, but very rarely use it. And I also have a Facebook page, which once again, it's not really that active. Mm-hmm. Merch is always best to try and get it from shows. But if you need specific sizings or designs, just hit me up on Instagram. I'll put something aside. I work in a logistics company, so shipping will be really cheap. So
there you go. Do you sell the shirt that you were wearing at ICW 76, the Heart of a Lion, Cock of a Whale shirt?
I do. I do need to do a reprint. I only have a couple of limited sizes available, but I do have that shirt available.
Amazing.
I am doing a reprint of my big face one. Yeah. And I'm also looking to get something really special for Dream this year as well. So keep your wallets clear and free for that.
There we go. That's awesome. Well, everybody, that's it. Check out everything from Heavy Set Violence online. Check out everything coming from DMDU, ICW No Holds Barred. And if you can't make the Adelaide shows, keep your eyes peeled to IWTV, because that match with Mike and Abdullah Kobayashi will make its way there. So, dude, I want to thank you so much for your time, yeah? And I hyped you up that we were going to have heaps of technical issues, and we had absolutely none after my entire morning being ruined. So you're a blessed man. Thank you so much. And everybody out there, remember, it's all about peace, love, and pro wrestling. Peace out.
Thanks for listening. Faces and Feels is a proud member of the Count Out Podcasting Network. It is created and hosted by me, Rafe Houston, edited by myself and the amazing Ryan Neitzy, and the show is available on all good podcast platforms, so please go rate and subscribe. You can follow the show everywhere on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc. at Faces Feels Cast, and you can check out the Count Out Network and all our sister shows over there at Count Out Pod. If you'd like to book me for commentary, have an interview request, a topic suggestion, or you just want to say hi, you can email us at facesandfeels@gmail.com. With all that said, thanks for listening, and please support our friends and sponsors. Peace.
Ring Post Radio is the only show hosted by Ryan Neitzy and Scotty Edwards that talks about the entire world of professional wrestling. With new episodes coming out every Sunday, there is absolutely no reason to not listen to real, honest wrestling opinions from two crazy maniacs. Have a hot boy summer and listen along to Ring Post Radio every Sunday on the Countout Network. This has been a Countout Podcast.